It's good to see you. Welcome. And just checking, make sure the sound is working. Is this working? Wonderful. Thanks. So, as we get settled for an evening of practice, of meditation, just to start with an introduction, I'm Doug Pullen, and this is Heart of Freedom Meditation. And it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to share Dharma practice with you. So, an invitation to get comfortable, to get settled. And it's Thursday, November 16th, and this practice is sponsored and supported by Portland Insight Meditation Community. So it's, yeah, it's a pleasure to be able to come together and share these teachings. So as we get settled, perhaps it's helpful to just to check in with your physical experience. So to check your sitting posture, to let it be an alert, upright posture that supports being present. And if you need to make any adjustments in terms of getting more pillows or perhaps a blanket or anything that helps with that, you know, sitting in a way that's supported and alert. To start with, just letting our eyes close and just bringing the focus in to direct experience, direct contact with the sensations of this body that sits. And to see, if as we settle in, if there's any places in the body, and just a sort of casual sweep through the body that are tense or tight or constricted, any residual stress or tension that we might be holding on to, see if it's possible to, as we bring awareness into our sitting form, to also bring an intention of ease, just letting things be at ease or to soften. Sometimes things aren't necessarily ready to let go, so we can just make room for it's like this. These are the sensations that are present. And if it's helpful, maybe to take a long, slow, deep breath or two, just let the breath offer us some relaxation. So it's this balancing between relaxation and uprightness, alertness, as we establish ourselves here in the present moment. And just an invitation to reflect on the conditions, the causes and conditions that make this evening possible, the opportunity to come together to practice. All of the decisions and just the grace that makes coming together to practice a reality for this evening. So as we settle to take up the practice of centering in the experience of the breath, just letting the breath breathe itself, just attending to the sensations of the breath, where we discover the breath in this moment. And we can let this be our touchstone, our present moment reference point. And if we discover that the mind goes off elsewhere, we can be curious about that and to come back to presence, to take refuge in presence, this quality of being awake, this place where we can discover the truth, in this place where we find interbeing, interconnectedness, both within and with in our community. And our presence here this evening is both for ourselves and for each other and for all beings. So we invite all beings to join us in practice. To see if it's possible to be present with this breath like we would be present for a precious gift that's been given to us by a dear friend. this breath is the gift of life. And so we can savor it, we can cherish it, we can be present with it, and as it's constantly in flux, we let it go, we receive it, stay with it, and then notice it disappears. As is true with all things that have a beginning, it too has an end. It comes into being, it rises to fullness, and then is released. It is the quintessential experience of this life, this moment. every time that our consciousness loses the present moment and drifts into a trance state, or is distracted or lost in fantasy, it's a gift. It's an opportunity for awakening. So instead of judging or getting lost in commentary or giving up or getting pulled into doubt, there's this wonderful opportunity to awaken to this moment just as it is. Whether it's thinking or some mental or emotional state or some seeming distraction, it's a gift in disguise for us to expand the field of our mindful presence and expand our kindness to include this too, this moment, this experience. And there's always the breath here as our touchstone in the present moment. So see if it's possible to just let the mindfulness do all the work, just being present without identification with judgments, without trying to make anything happen or not happen, is actually a radical intervention. You just accept this moment with complete awareness, these body sensations, these thoughts, these feelings, with the experience of the breath at the center. So just letting this awareness do the work of transformation. So in the last few minutes of this sit, just staying present with kindness for whatever's here. If there's anything that's difficult to sit with, see if it's possible to really both acknowledge that, yeah, this is difficult, and at the same time really just allowing yourself to feel it. It's like this is the way it is. It's unpleasant, or it's difficult to bear, and to do so with kindness, which opens the heart of compassion. And if there is an experience of pleasantness or peace or joy, we can open to that too. Really open and just allow that experience to expand, deepen, without clinging, just allowing this moment to be like this, to appreciate and perhaps even experience gratitude for how life is unfolding in this moment. see if it's possible to experience this moment as enough. Nothing else is needed, nothing to resist, nothing to cling to. This moment, this breath, these body sensations, this life, this is enough. And perhaps there's resistance, or perhaps it's experienced as a distraction. So being present with the possibility that this moment could be enough. So if there is stiffness or soreness in this body, please have mercy, mindfully letting the body move or stretch. Yeah, taking good care, being here with presence. Perhaps a little bit of gratitude for being able to practice in this way. So the focus for our practice this evening is on radical gratitude. So I'm going to start with a relatively brief Dharma reflection. There'll be another short guided meditation, and then an opportunity for some sharing in a blessing circle. So if there's questions or things you'd like to share, there'll be time towards the end for that. So it's the third Thursday of the month, and I like to do with a fair amount of regularity an opportunity for us to do a blessing circle. So I think we'll stick with that ritual this evening. I'd like to start with some words from Christy Nelson. She said, cultivating, practicing, and sustaining gratefulness as an approach to life is radical because it flies in the face of internal and external forces which want us to believe the big untruth, the big lie, that we need to have more and more in order to be happy. And we live in a mainstream culture that, to a large extent, perpetuates that untruth, that deception, that somehow we aren't enough, that there's something wrong with us. and to experience contentment, to feel like we are enough, that we have enough, is almost a heresy in the religion of a capitalist consumer culture. So in a sense, we're swimming against the stream in this practice. And it's important to have a pod to swim with. So that's part of what Sangha is for, is to help us, have some support to swim in these, through these challenging times, in these challenging times. So that's what we try to do here at PIMC. It's part of what I try to do. So this practice of gratitude, radical gratitude, is really to help us to refocus the mind away from what could be a constant sense of threat and danger, and shift our attention towards the aspects of life that we can actually be grateful for despite all of the difficulties that we're facing in the world. So in Buddhism, I don't think that if you really understand the Four Noble Truths, you could say that the Buddha was someone who was suggesting that we go stick our heads in the sand and try to deny or escape the anguish and struggles and difficulties of life. So it's within that context then that we can talk about genuine gratitude. Because it isn't a practice of denial. The Buddha started with dukkha. And absolutely, there is dukkha. There is suffering. There is that which is difficult to bear. There is unsatisfactoriness. So, I'm guessing everyone here doesn't need me to remind you of that. That's part of what draws us to a practice like this. So it's within that context, that understanding, then, that we start to be able to have radical gratitude. And it's based on this understanding that the end of dukkha, the end of suffering, the end of that which is difficult to bear, to a large extent, comes from the ability to turn towards it with mindfulness and compassion and understanding, wisdom. So that's how we get to appreciate things that are difficult, because if we can bring mindfulness and compassion and a skillful understanding, we can turn the things that are cause anguish and that sense of not being enough, to transform them into contentment and peace and freedom. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Joseph Goldstein, who was one of the early teachers to bring the insight meditation practice to the United States, said in his book One Dharma, when we feel true gratitude, whether towards particular people or towards life, metta, loving kindness, just naturally flows from us. And when we connect with another person through gratitude, the barriers that separate us begin to melt. So check that out. Is that true? The propositions that I offer in these Dharma talks are really invitations to reflect on your own experience. Is that really true? When we feel gratitude, do our hearts open? Jack Kornfield, and one of the other kind of early purveyors of this teaching, in the Vipassana tradition, said that in certain Buddhist traditions, there's a prayer in which one makes a rather unusual request of the universe. Please bring me challenges and obstacles. And he went on to say, in certain temples that I've been to, there's actually a prayer that you make asking for difficulties. May I be given the appropriate difficulties so that my heart can truly open with compassion. That's radical gratitude. Being grateful for not only the blessings, but also for the things that are difficult to bear. I'm suggesting that that's a key component of a spiritual path. Not just this spiritual path, and actually more broadly to a life that's fulfilling and meaningful. There's something that I've witnessed. I have the privilege and honor to bear witness to a lot of people's suffering on a very intimate level as a therapist and counselor. And I've witnessed people sharing stories about horrendous trauma and abuse. And not that it doesn't cause incredible wounds and trauma, but I've also seen something called post-traumatic growth, which is, even with the most horrendous experiences, often there's incredible growth and transformation. Not that we would wish those on anyone, not that we should allow any kind of abuse or trauma or horrendous actions to happen. But in spite of that, there's still amazing things that can happen. And so it's changing our relationship to our experience. And there is no shoulds, have-tos, ought-tos. This isn't prescriptive. This isn't saying you should. It certainly isn't saying you should enjoy your suffering. That would be absurd and stupid. But it is saying, when the unavoidable suffering comes, there can start to be a choice about how we hold it. Grief is inevitable insofar as being human means that we're going to face loss. We're going to lose things that we cherish. That's unavoidable. And to the degree that we attach and feel connected to other human beings, we're going to feel pain. But there's with practice, with spiritual practice, with this practice, there starts to be choice about how we hold that pain. And like to share a beautiful Sufi teaching that can remind us how our pain isn't personal, It's an intrinsic part of being human. Now, it comes in lots of different varieties. There's almost infinite varieties of pain. But here's the Sufi teaching from Pir Vilayat Khan. He said, try to overcome any bitterness that may have come because you were not up to the magnitude of the pain that was entrusted to you. Like the mother of the world who carries the pain of the world in her heart, each one of us is part of her heart and therefore endowed with a certain measure of cosmic pain. And so we don't get to choose whether there is some measure of cosmic pain, but we might get to choose to some degree how we relate to that experience and how we understand that it can lead to freedom. And part of a big piece of gratitude is really connected to compassion. You could say that they're cousins or they're very closely related. That to the degree that we're in touch with kindness and the preciousness of human life, we can see that every human birth, every single birth is precious and worthy of gratitude. Just imagine how the world would be transformed if we really lived from that truth. What an incredible change it would cause. And the Buddha said in one of his well-known analogies that receiving a human birth is more rare than the chance that a blind turtle floating in the ocean would stick its head through a small hoop and it only rises for air every 100 years. He would often instruct a student to take their ground cloth into the forest to sit at the base of a tree and begin to what he referred to as gladden the heart by reflecting on a series of fortunate circumstances that had given the monk motivation and ability to seek freedom through understanding the Dharma. So this evening, not everybody was here right at the beginning, but I invited that reflection, not exactly in those words, but and we can circle back to it. What great good fortune that we've heeded the call of life to turn towards this human experience, to experience the preciousness of it, and to awaken right here in the middle of it. And that's not easy to do. Fortunately, in this neck of the woods, we're in a place where there isn't war nearby. Most of us have enough food to eat. We have clothes, we have, shelter. That's not true in a lot of places in the world. So there's something else to be grateful for. What an incredible opportunity. And there's the Dharma. We actually have access to the Dharma. Just in the city of Portland, I haven't counted recently, all of the major Buddhist traditions are represented. You could go to a Zen temple one night, go to a Vajrayana practice, go to practice Shambhala, go to inside meditation, lots of different forms. Incredibly, this has never happened before in the world. It's only been in the last, maybe 25 or 30 years that that's been true, at least in Portland, where there was a variety of places to practice. We kind of forget it, and we take it for granted. We forget our circumstance, our context, and not to say that we should, it isn't about saying, oh gee, don't we have it good, and those poor, pitiful souls there that are suffering. That's not it at all. It's like, when we really understand the preciousness of this life and the resources that we're given, of course we want to share it. And of course we want to reach out and do whatever we can to alleviate suffering. And maybe to be grateful that we have something to give, that we have some resources to share. So this practice of gratitude doesn't deny any of the suffering in the world. In fact, uses it as a tool for opening our hearts. And the practice doesn't deny the reality of death. In the teaching of the Buddha, the focus on death was part of the practice. It's there certainly in the first of the Satipatthanas, the focus on the body, to focus on the nature of this body to age and sicken. And so to be present for the nature of this body to have sickness and the potential for it to die is an opportunity for gratitude each day when there's still a breath that's happening. There's still a body that's able to walk, this temporarily abled form. It actually allows us to have access to joy and wonderment and appreciation as an antidote to feelings of scarcity and loss, and helps us to begin to meet life with an open heart. And it's like that appreciation that we see in young children, or just the wonder of life. There's many ways to use mindfulness to cultivate gratitude. And I'm just going to mention a few here, and we'll circle back and do a kind of a more gratitude-specific practice. Can respond even to a difficult situation by acknowledging it as such. So, for example, yes, this is really terrible, and I'm grateful for. So it isn't denying the terribleness of it, but there's always something there that there can also be some appreciation for. An example would be, I'm really angry at this moment, and I'm grateful that I have a mind which knows that it's angry and doesn't have to act it out indiscriminately. I could cause a lot more harm if I wasn't mindful in this moment. So we can focus on that. And it's not dependent on feeling good right now. We can reflect on it as being time-based. So ask yourself, what happened to all the gratitude you felt in the past? Where did it go if you're having a rough time? Do you believe that gratitude is dependent on just feeling good right now? If so, isn't that kind of more small-minded? But would it not imply that gratitude is contingent upon kind of an exchange? As long as I feel good, then I can be grateful. But what if it's bigger than that? What if the capacity is bigger than that? We can cultivate that. There's the practice of being consciously grateful for those beings who bring us relational nurturance, friends, family, teachers, benefactors. I find it really helpful each day to just take a moment and just reflect on all of those beings who make my life more wonderful. My students, my friends, my teachers, just reflecting on that. And to notice what happens, to really be present for how that feels, to connect with that. And to take a few minutes, maybe at the end of each day, to mentally note the many people who have served us by providing medicine, shelter, food, education. For folks who have certain struggles with feeling like they don't have enough, or there's a sense of kind of inadequacy, doing a journal of gratitude is powerful, it's helpful. And making a list like this isn't meant to make us feel indebted, but it's intended to clarify our understanding of how life actually works. We're inexorably intertwined with each other. The illusion of a separate independent self can lead to a kind of what the Buddha called kind of a kind of conceit, and it's not a happy place for us. Happiness comes when we understand that we inter are and can appreciate how we support each other in so many different ways in community. Our culture tends to leave people feeling pretty isolated, pretty disconnected, and we lose that sense of our gratitude for each other and the gifts that we give. We have so much, and not everybody, of course. There's some among us who are really struggling and having really a lot of challenges with paying the rent and having enough food and those things, but many of us have enough that we can share, and if not in terms of money, at least time and energy and support, and that's a wonderful thing to be grateful for. The words gratitude and grace share a common origin. The Latin word gratis means pleasing or thankful. So when we're in a deep state of gratitude, there is often a spontaneous feeling of grace, the grace in receiving a human life is that it grants the capacity to experience that which is beyond the mind and body. You could call it the absolute, you could call it the unborn, the unoriginated, the unformed, you could call it nirvana. But there's that quality of grace. And so practice is often like creating the conditions for grace, to happen. It's not something we make happen. It just happens. There's the grace of freedom. And gratitude is one thing that really contributes to that, that sense of interbeing, of interconnectedness. And gratitude for the grace of conscious embodiment, to really be fully incarnated, evolves into the practice of selfless gratitude, in which our self-concerns shift to being more concerns about all living beings. And there's a natural sharing and giving and wanting to give. So gratitude and generosity are intertwined. They come from the same source. And circling back and then doing a guided meditation, when we're able to find gratitude amidst all of life's joys and sorrows, we realize that pain and joy are part of this mysterious whole thing that is being human. And then when this state of gratitude starts to blossom, our mind becomes more spacious, more quiet, and our heart receives its release, really, from fear and wanting, and there's an experience of contentment. So that's the promise of the practice. And so I'd like to do a little guided meditation. And this practice is first just based on what we were just doing a little while ago. So circling back to connecting with the breath, attending to our posture, maybe letting our eyes close. And if you're noticing there's any kind of tension or stress that's crept back in, maybe just allow a slow, deep breath to bring yourself more fully into ease and presence. And to check in with your body, and if there's any places where there could be some softening. And to notice if there's any mental anguish present, any worries, fear, anger, irritation, jealousy, judgment, and just breathe in to those, noticing how they might manifest in the body, and noting them, and just allowing them to flow as much as they're able to, just flowing energy as you breathe, just allowing them to soften. And any thoughts or memories, plans, associations, anything other than being here with the breath, just breathing through those thoughts. And as you breathe, just let them go. Just let them flow. As I go through the guided meditation with these suggestions, feel free if you've heard enough and you just need to stay centered in yourself to just notice the sound of my voice is hearing, and then you can just stay present with your breath or whatever practice is most helpful. These are just general invitations, guidelines. So trust your inner wisdom. The invitation here is really to reflect on the gift of life. Someone gave birth to you. Someone fed you as an infant, changed your diaper, clothed you, bathed you, taught you to speak and to understand. So, just noticing what comes up. There's the gift of hearing, whether it's the song of a bird, the notes of a band or orchestra, the songs of singing and voices, the sound of your own breathing flowing in and out. There's the gift of a heartbeat, steady, regular, moment after moment, pumping fresh, life-giving blood to all of your organs. That's happening right now. And just noticing how your body feels as you reflect on these things that you might be grateful for. Now think about all of the things that we have today that make our lives easier and more comfortable. More comfortable than they were for like great grandparents. We flip a switch and light appears. We turn a tap and there's clean drinkable water. We adjust the thermostat and the room grows warmer or cooler. We have a roof to keep us dry when it rains. And we have walls to keep the wind out. We have access to all kinds of machines that wash our clothes and dishes. And we have libraries that we can go to. We have computers where we can access information. Just reflecting on all of the wonderful things that make our lives easier. And now just to take a moment to reflect on all of the thousands of people who've worked hard, some without knowing you at all, to make your life easier and more pleasant. Those who grow our food and harvest our food. Those who transport it. Those who build the roads. All of those who stock and store and sell the foods that we have. All of the people in service industries that we depend on. All of the information that we receive that lets us know what's going on in the world. And once again, just a reminder to stay connected to your body, your breath. I'd like to invite us to consider something that was challenging or difficult or even painful that came to us in life that was an opportunity for growth, that helped us to learn more about ourselves, about life. Yeah, just notice what comes to mind. And I'd like to really open this up now before we bring this meditation to a close, and just to reflect on your own sources of gratitude, your resources for gratitude, things that really make it real for you. How does that feel? And is there anything that you're finding challenging currently in your life that you could try shifting your focus a little bit to see if there's any aspect of it that you could begin to feel grateful for? And not to push it. Like I said before, no shoulds, have to's, ought to's. Just an invitation. Yeah. And then to bring this to a close, I'd like to just invite you to once again just notice how you're feeling throughout your body, your emotions, thoughts, compared to perhaps where you were when we started. Not judging, just noticing. To share with you a poem. This is from Derek Walcott called Love After Love. The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit and feast on your life. In the spirit of gratitude. Yeah. So, like to, before we do the blessing circle, just to check in and see if there's any sharing or questions about gratitude, a gratitude practice. And with the sharing, we can keep with our kind of tradition of saying our names, and then when we're finished, to just, after we've shared a few words, maybe just to say, I've spoken, or I'm finished, so next person knows that it's their turn.
Doug, I was wondering if you could say something about how do you practice with gratitude when the immediate circumstances of your life seem overwhelmingly threatening or scary or cruel. When it's not just something out there, but it's like your daily reality.
Yeah.
That's all for me. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Wonderful question, Esme. And, for me, personally, I look for a connection, for community. So to find solace there and feel grateful for that, to know that if I'm feeling scared and alone, at least I don't need to be alone. That there's other people, other human beings who are experiencing something similar or the same. And to find gratitude and appreciation in community and support. It isn't always easy to do, though. And for some, finding community is really challenging and it's scary and maybe risky. So I don't mean to suggest that that's easy to access, but And on a spiritual level, there's the place where we are never alone. So there's being able to tap into that or remember that. Is that helpful? Does that make sense?
It is. And actually remembering my ancestors are with me, it's like one of my ways of dealing in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm grateful for the people who are here with me now, but also grateful for like all loving beings of all time who could help to carry us through moments like these.
There has, throughout history, been subjugation, oppression, horrible things, and people have come together and found a way to survive and support each other. And so tapping into our ancestors, that's beautiful. Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Doug, this is Kathy, and I guess I would also like to pose a question. As I think you know, I have worked a lot in my professional life internationally, and I am regularly struck with the thought of how did I end up being born in this wealthy country and allowed an education, and things came relatively easy compared to a lot of the people that I have worked with and on behalf of in poor countries. And I think, of course, there's gratitude there about just the fortune of circumstance. But there's also a sense of guilt. Like, why did I, the arbitrariness of where you're born, and a sense of helplessness to a certain degree about sitting here in these circumstances while others do suffer as much as they do. And so that kind of is difficult sometimes when I'm thinking about how you carry gratitude forward in those circumstances, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about it.
Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, appreciate that question. To have our hearts broken open by seeing the incredible suffering of people who don't have enough food to eat or clean water to drink. Gratitude is powerful and useful, but it certainly isn't the only wholesome emotional response. And it's right alongside compassion. And, compassion is what our human heart does in relationship to suffering and trying to alleviate suffering. And to whatever degree I am able to do something to help reduce suffering in the world, I can feel gratitude for that. With the question of, why me? Why was I given all of this? That's one of those questions that the Buddha said that unless you're a fully awakened being, you can never really understand it. It's like trying to understand karma is impossible for most of us. So it's challenging, it's hard. One thing I do recognize is that if I get caught in guilt, that it keeps me, it takes energy away and consciousness away from doing what I can do. So I think it's natural to feel guilty, and it's part of grief to feel guilty. There's that experience, but hopefully with our practice, we don't get caught there. So we can not have it, keep us from doing what we can do. So there's that. There's also, I was in India many years ago. I was in Bodh Gaya, and there were Tibetan refugees there. And they had nothing but the clothes on their back. Nothing. I mean, they just came escaping the Chinese rule of Tibet. And I didn't speak their language, but they were some of the most joyful people that I ever met. And they had absolutely nothing. Now, they did have food, and they were getting food and water. So that kind of that shifted my understanding a little bit about what wealth means. We have incredible material wealth, but as a culture, we're pretty spiritually impoverished. So there's different kinds of wealth, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to feed the world, and make sure that everybody has water and food and everything that they need. But there's something that we really lose, too, in taking for granted our material wealth. We lose our humanity and, you know, connection to life and the preciousness of it. So that was kind of long-winded. I don't know. Does that help make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you. But I just, you know, we're not supposed to have a lot of crosstalk, but I have often reflected that for some of the communities I worked with in Africa and elsewhere that were quite destitute, they had such a strong sense of community and connectedness that I think we are missing in our society. So, you know, just to speak to your last point, that yes, very different types of fortune. It's only in times like this, with all the conflict and violence in the world that are visiting us regularly, that I, you know, I feel like we do take for granted our safety, security, comfort, etc. And how to sit with that. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're actually at the time when we should be starting to wrap up. I'd like to kind of honor those boundaries so we don't go too late. Let's do close with... one thing before we do close, I just need to mention I forgot to do announcements earlier. It didn't seem like it flowed exactly, but an important thing, I'm going to be taking a break next week. Next week is Thanksgiving. I'm going to be away. So we won't be having Art of Freedom on Thursday next week. But there are practice opportunities. Trina Tran is one of our wonderful new teachers at PMC, is going to be offering a retreat. So there's information on the website. So there will be a practice opportunity on Thursday. It actually goes through the weekend. So if you're interested in sitting with support, there's that there. So I'll be back here to teach on the 30th of November. And then you're hearing it here first, folks. I'm going to offer on the 21st of December, which is solstice, in person and on Zoom, on Heart of Freedom. So I'm not sure if that will become a regular thing, maybe once a month, or I'm kind of trying it out, stepping back in, but starting with the 21st of December, I will be at PIMC offering in person, and that'll be our annual solstice candlelight meditation. So I hope that some of you can come. If you can't come in person, we'll be on Zoom, so it'll be hybrid. And there'll be more information coming out about that. So, yeah. So let's circle back. I'm sorry I didn't really leave time for blessings, but I'd like to invite you, at least sharing blessings, but let's notice in our hearts this evening if there is a blessing for either ourselves or others or both. Just notice what your heart would share, even though we don't have time to share the words. We can hold it in our heart and create a space where we send these blessings out. Yeah, and it could be for any number of things, anything you can imagine that you'd like to wish for yourself or other beings. and that brings a sense of wholeness or peace or freedom, an experience of gratitude. Maybe it's coming from a place of compassion or joyfulness. Yeah. And notice how it feels in your body. And then imagining that going out into the world, maybe coming back to you or out to another person, a loved one, or someone that's unknown to you, or a group of people. Yeah, just letting our blessings flow. And then perhaps we can come back into connection here in this group and have a sense of our shared energy, a circle of hands and hearts, you know, channeling these wishes out into the world. Yeah, supporting each other and all beings. And I'd like to invite us to close with a chant. May all beings be happy. And we'll do that three times. And then, sadhu, so be it, three times. So feel free to unmute if you'd like to join me. And we'll send our wishes with the chant. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So please take whatever blessings there are from this practice and continue to experience them. Take what's good. And anything that's not helpful, just let it go. So you only take the good stuff. Have a good week this next week, and I'll hopefully see you again on the 30th.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Good.